Hello, and welcome to the Real Life Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer McKee. I'm so excited to have you join me each week as we explore a variety of topics around life in the greater Palm Springs area. From real estate market updates to lifestyle topics, interesting people, food and entertainment, we keep it authentic and fun. Please be sure to like, subscribe, and follow Jennifer McKee Realtor on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube to keep up to date on everything happening in the Coachella Valley. Also, be sure to go to Apple Podcasts and like and leave a review for this show. I really appreciate it. And now, without further ado, let's go to this week's show. Welcome again, and thanks for joining us. I have my partner in crime here, my pandemic co-host, Ryan, my husband.
Hello.
Thank you again for joining me. We are into, I don't even know what day or week it is, it feels like, into this quarantine, because every day bleeds into the next, and we're just, it's like Groundhog Day. I know I mentioned that before, but it's like that over and over. But the update here in the state of California, we just got news that the governor extended the stay-at-home order, or the shelter-in-place order, until May 15th. So it was originally April 30th, right, Ryan?
Yeah, 29th, 30th, somewhere in there. So that means now I've got more weeks of podcasting testing I have to do.
Yes. And we are doing okay in our home and our family. We're in a beautiful place in the country to have to be quarantined because the weather is perfection and the sun is shining and the palm trees are blowing in the breeze. I feel bad for people who don't, or maybe freezing or it's rainy and cloudy or whatever, but the kids are doing okay. I think it's just harder on the teenage boys that can't see their girlfriends. That's the hardest thing. And they're bummed that they aren't involved in their sports activities at the high school and all of that good stuff because they were notified that there's going to be no school for the rest of the school year. So there's that.
The thing that I keep wondering, you know, is, people have been pretty patient. We're a month or so now into this. I think people have been kind of obviously concerned about the impact of the virus and all that. But what I'm getting a sense of now is that there's starting to become sort of a restlessness, and folks are going, okay, look, you know, if we're flattening the curve, we're not seeing a lot of people get sick. Is this thing really as serious as you guys all said it was? You know, you're asking us to stay home. We can't even go out to grab, you know, supplies at Home Depot because people are, you know, making them feel
shaming
them and all this stuff. And, you know, cause people don't even have the resources in their homes to take care of themselves for, you know, a few days, because we're all consumers. We go out and we buy everything that we need. And now suddenly you're telling people they have to stay home for like another 2 or 3 weeks. I think people, I don't know. I'm just getting this sense from different places like Facebook and conversations that it's like, I don't know how much longer they can keep people in their houses before there's kind of a little mutiny on the bounty.
I agree. I think in general, Americans don't like to be told what to do. We like our freedoms. And I think a lot of people will put up with this for a while, but how long, right? How long? And so, you know, then we can't even go, I don't know what all the laws are or the rules and the guidelines are in all the other states, but now where we're at, you can't, at least in our county, go anywhere without a mask on. So you need to have some sort of face or mouth, nose covering. I was at the store getting groceries and they were turning away people who didn't have any on. So that's a newer development.
Well, then you have the HOAs, because most of the communities around here are gated or HOA communities. And so then they have, you know, it's communist Russia and a lot of these places, it's worse than. So, I mean, you kind of check your constitution at the gate when you come in. So, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, the neighborhood next to us, which is a neighborhood of, I mean, around 3,000 homes, probably just under that, they won't let anyone through the gate. Now, it's a senior community, 55 and older, retirement resort community, and they won't let anyone in the gate without a mask. And you're in your car. You have to have your mask on. I show a lot of houses in there. So yeah, you have to have your mask on. And I have someone wanting to view homes in there later this week, and they'll ride in their own car. We'll wear masks. I'll use gloves to open the door, let them in. I won't walk them through it like normal. So we're going to be safe and follow all the guidelines and be very cautious. But they, in that same neighborhood, if they catch you with anyone in your home that doesn't live there, and there are people driving around, a security drive around taking photos, you get, this is what I was told, you get fined $200 per person that doesn't live in the home if they're there. So it's a little extreme. I get that they're trying to protect their community and the seniors, and I can appreciate that piece of it, but I also think, whoa, like, is this constitutional? We'll see.
Well, yeah, again, when you sign that HOA doc, I think you pretty much give up any constitutional rights. It's like those guys, sometimes you pledge your allegiance to the HOA board.
Right. And it's just interesting how each country is dealing with this pandemic and how we can just shut down and people, for the most part, I know that there are people who are struggling and people who can't find food, and the food lines are long at, food banks and things like that. So I'm not minimizing that. But in the average American, we have enough in our pantry, or we can head out to the grocery store as we need. But you just talked to a friend recently in another country where that isn't even an option in their country, right?
Yeah. Well, and not to get too far down this road, the thing that has that I've been watching and wondering about, again, because people are starting to get restless, is it's not like with like an Ebola or something where you've got sort of a 50% or higher death rate from, somebody gets infected and their chance of dying is like extremely high. With this, with the COVID-19, it's like 2%, 1.5%, 2%. So the numbers may be larger in terms of infections, and it potentially could have been millions. And, you're talking about tens of thousands of people having some sort of a fatal response to it. But because we've had such extreme measures to protect, and everybody's in their homes, and now it's going on weeks and weeks and weeks, and you're not really seeing the kinds of deaths in most of the country that they had predicted. You might have it in places like New York and some of those, but for somebody in Iowa or somebody out here in the Valley, I mean, it seems so far removed. So yeah, I think people are starting to say like, okay, well, maybe why can't New York kind of have its own policy, and then maybe Montana or, rural LA County areas and stuff, why can't they kind of have a different policy? Why does it all have to just be this blanket sort of, nobody go out? There's reasons for that, obviously, but I think people are starting to ask these questions of, I'm not seeing the point here. Why are we doing this? But the concern, I think, too, is this thing may come in waves. And so then if everybody's grown tired of the waiting and staying home and the economic impact and all of that, then what happens if it comes back a second time or a third time? People are going to be way less likely to want to comply. So, they've got to come up with a system that makes this potentially, if it's a long-term issue, something that we can sustain in terms of, how to protect the economy and let people still do what they need to do, but also keep us safe. And it's really tricky. I mean, I don't envy anybody that's in a position of authority trying to figure this out, but it is.
And everyone's, really, it's all speculation, right? They're right. Trying to get ahead of it, guess, and speculate how everything's going to play out. And it's just, no one knows. One knows. So we are following the rules. We're sheltering in place. We only go out when necessary for essential items and try to do our big grocery shopping all at once, and then only go out again when we need to get stuff. And we haven't seen friends and other extended family. And, so I get it. It's tough for people, and especially extroverts who are just itching to hang out and see their friends.
I don't understand that at all.
The introvert in the family. When we did a side note, we did a game night, a virtual game night with a bunch of friends on Zoom. And that was kind of fun, being able to see a bunch of different faces and talk at the same time and play games. And I think the world, at least, countries that can, in our country, we are utilizing technology now more than ever. The churches are having to use technology, the schools, families, if you're wanting to visit each other. So what used to be, like I mentioned before, what used to be in a previous episode, divisive tool, like our phones and things like that, that kind of shut us down from talking to those in the room and family, it's really bringing everybody together right now. And I'm very thankful for that.
The last episode, we had mentioned about reaching out to somebody in the food service and restaurant industry. We were kind of talking about that.
Because it's so hard hit.
I had connected with Chef Daniel Villanueva, and great guy. Got a restaurant called Daniel's Table in Cat City in Cathedral City. And we had an interview. I was able to record that with him. Wanted to be able to include that in this episode. So if you don't have anything else, we could go to that interview and let people kind of hear what
his take on it.
His take on it. It's actually really interesting because of just the unique position of his restaurant. It's not like an Applebee's or a fast food place. It's a very, you know, kind of almost custom bespoke artistry kind of farm to table type restaurant. So,
well, I'm very interested because I know you and I talk about, man, what is that company doing? What's that business? How are they staying afloat? How are these restaurants going to make it out alive? So I'm excited to hear your interview with Chef Daniel.
All right, here we go. Well, Chef Daniel, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on this call. I've been really interested to talk to you and hear about the restaurant and all the stuff going on with the impact of the shutdown and everything. So could you give us a quick intro into who you are, into your restaurant? You guys are in Cathedral City, and kind of just a little bit of, you know, what's the impact of everything and how it's changed the face of your restaurant and business right now?
Well, Daniel's Table is my restaurant. I'm Chef Daniel, like Ryan said. I've got Daniel's Table here in Cathedral City. It is a completely seasonal and essential to life type restaurant, very medicinal aspects of foods, including spices. And then everything grown from ranches and farms within a couple hundred miles. Specifically for my taste and my restaurant and what I want to serve. And we're serving clean food, non-GMO. So it's really a restaurant about life. People trip out when I say that. But I like to mention that up front. So as far as this this virus happening, this stuff happening right now, as far as in the Coachella Valley has affected, you know, many lives, and I'm very very non-judgmental, but sort of biased, if that is an oxymoron. I apologize, but you know, so I got, you know, I have a ton of faith that everything's going to be good if everybody hangs tight. However, you know, there's just a lot of restaurants have already closed, and they just already threw in the towel, and they're like, you know what, we're done. We're just not even going to open for summer. We're going to shut down, which is, you know, works for whatever. Our restaurant here, Dan's Table, is a 49-seater. So it's small, 9 tables, seat 4 each. And then we got a chef's counter up in the front. We do various types of coursed meals and wine dinners. So we're very specific type of people, which seek to find a specific thing. The people that come here, they seek us because this is their way of living and eating. So that actually works on our behalf during this situation. Because I believe at the end of the day, when this is said and done, people are going to realize that probably like their diets probably are not in good shape. So we've been affected. Yes. You know, I lost like 97% of our business, 98% of my business. My employees have been laid off. You know, I'm lucky if I make $200-$300 in a week, you know, in 5 days. You know, I've managed to keep, you know, my cell phone on, obviously my internet on, my, all the basics of running this operation here. And so far, But, you know, I don't live with, a panic button anywhere remotely close to my presence. So for me, I believe actually we're going to be back in the ball game here very, very shortly. I believe that it's going to that surprise a great many of people out here in the Coachella Valley. I was talking with a Restaurant Week personnel, one of the wonderful people over there a few days ago, and I shared, people ask for my opinion, and I shared that I believe that by the May 29th date that we're going to pop in to Restaurant Week to not change it, because we're going to pop right in. We're going to need you guys. We're going to pop in about 2 weeks prior to Restaurant Week here coming up in a couple of weeks. I believe everything is going to fly out as quick as it flew in. And I believe in the next 2-3 weeks as well. So,
one of the things,
I'm good. Thank you, Ryan.
One of the things that I was impressed with on your restaurant when the first time that we had eaten there and we're working on a project together, and you had made some different dishes and was just the flavors. And the big part of it was you had explained, you're very farm to table. You have all these relationships with local farmers. And the difference was incredible. I mean, just the grapes and some of the flavors and just the regular produce and things that you had provided was just off the charts. And I've been wondering, I had heard some information on the radio a couple of weeks ago when everything was starting, and I may have some of the details wrong on this, but I'm kind of in a ballpark figure of what they had told me, or what they had said on the radio was something like there's 100,000 restaurants in California. They are anticipating that when all of this is said and done, something like 50 to 75,000 of those restaurants will probably never reopen. And they said the greater impact that they're anticipating too, because I think there's something like 3 or 4 million people in the restaurant industry in California that are all kind of connected to it, servers and distributors and all that. But it's the other additional pieces, like I said, this, the distributors, the farmers, all of the other food service personnel and people in the industry that are being impacted as well, kind of down the line. And because your restaurant is so well connected to the farm community, I was curious. I've been wanting to talk to you because I thought, I wonder what he is seeing with those other facets of this industry. Are there other farmers and people that are kind of starting to bite their nails a little bit and wonder what's going on? Or because they're more seasonal and they may have other outlets, are they able to weather this storm to some degree? I was curious kind of what your take was.
Well, as far as the farm, I was at the market on this past Saturday, and the farmers, they're starting. That's a great way to put it. They're kind of biting their nails a little bit right now. I ran through the market there at the tail end because I was doing some to-go orders all morning for lunch, some nice stuff. And I wanted to go and I wanted to share my strength with them and give them hope and to know that, like, look, guys, because they all kind of seemed a little down, they were, and I just made it clear to them, look, we're like so close. Like, remember when you were, had that one obstacle in school that you were like, man, I've been trying so hard and this just doesn't want to work. And then like the next day it worked. I'm like, okay, so hang on and it'll be fine soon. We need you. I posted on Instagram, the world needs you. We need you. My restaurant needs you and my guests need you. So, hang tight. I was just really trying to show gratitude to those guys through social media, because that's a big thing. But as far as how, excuse me. Back to the question regarding, the ton of closure for the state of California. It seems a bit high to me. However, I wouldn't know. But it does seem a bit high. I would say probably like about maybe 40%, 30, 40% closure. That's what I would say out of 100,000. But that's just me. But still, that's a lot. That's a lot of lives changing. That's a lot of And I'll share my light at the end of the tunnel with you regarding that. And this is how I see it, Ryan. I've seen this for years coming in this direction. I believe part of leaving Hollywood, 10 years ago to come out here, after the market and writer strikes and all that stuff, and starting from scratch again, but noticing that there were so many farms out here. And I was like, wow, that's, And so I think, I started with a crumb and ended up with a whole piece of bread and all these amazing relationships with these farmers here, years later. And I really believe that I'll say this, but it's not bragging, but like the last time I got sick was when my wife and I met like 8 years ago. And, I think it was just because my body was getting used to her body, germs or whatever. And then before that, hadn't been sick for like 7 years. And this whole time, I work with my food and I'm, not a fast food eater and not to knock those guys, but I'm just saying, this is what I'm saying in a nutshell before I get running off on the side, is that I believe that the restaurants that did close or that do close, I think at some point in time, we also have to do our best to hang in there. A lot of places don't hang in there and they just are like, we're just not going to do this. And they're boom, they're in fear. They're like, we're shutting down. Okay. There's gotta be a high percentage of that as well. I know, with us not being charged per se, right now for this moment, all of these, expenses that it takes to run our place. You got to ask yourself, it's like, okay, well, if obviously this is a massive eye in the sky, letting people know like, hey, I think your diets are kind of terrible. And you're not eating healthy and, everybody is on this, I want it fast, I want it quick, type of mindset, specifically the United States, then if you could change that to slow down and say, hey, why don't we start a garden, grow our food and work with people and get things back in the best that we can with all of our technology. If people can just put a pair of boots back on and just kind of go in the back and learn how to pull weeds again, I think that these restaurants that close, okay, then they close, right? Okay. But I believe that there's others there that is going to speak a higher message to them. It's going to be like, hey, why don't you get rid of that fryer and up your game? Or, oh my gosh, let's jump on this bandwagon of farm to table. And it's not a bandwagon. It's actually a way of life. It is like a real moving wagon, right? So I'm with what I'm putting out there is I believe that these restaurants that are closing, if it's meant for them to be open, then they'll open back up. And if it's not, then, I'm sure there'll be something else wonderful for them out there and their employees. There's going to be plenty of jobs. I know when this is done open. As far as the restaurants that stay open, the other percentage that is not going to close, I hope that they up their game because the restaurant business is a very selfish business. Cheap, even in a fine dining restaurant, lesser quality food, higher price, because you want to drive a Mercedes or you want to drive two of them or you want to have three houses. Okay. So then the consumer will suffer. See, but here, like what I do is this food is real and people are like, oh, well, why is your food as much as it is over here in this other place? That's so fancy schmancy. I'm like, well, because I'm spending my money on my food for you. And the more that they come, we have an amazing, like a 17-18% return on our gas here. Before, we got, sat down for a little bit. That's a great number because that's consistency, and love and quality of what we're doing. So in essence, I think if you close, you close. If you stay open, I hope you find a deeper purpose to what you're doing besides you know, paying your lease on your car or something. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, this might be an unpopular question. I don't know if people are going to feel like I'm being somewhat incendiary when I ask this. Something that has been mulling in the back of my mind as having been a small business owner in the past and knowing how difficult it is from a cash flow standpoint, when I have seen a lot of people online talking about, you know, supporting small restaurants by buying gift certificates or other types of, you know, sort of short-term fixes, anticipating that business will still be there in, say, 3 months or 6 months or whatever. And I have been kind of in the back of my mind been thinking, like, is that really the best solution? Because let's say everybody goes out and buys a bunch of gift certificates for, you know, one of these 30 to 40% of restaurants that may close. Are they going to actually even be there to redeem these gift certificates down the road? It might help in a short term, you know, week or two or a couple of weeks for some payroll or rent or whatever. But most of these restaurants, from what I've read or seen, I mean, you know, it's a lot like retail in many ways, but you know, they're typically maybe they have enough savings for 10 days, 14 days of operation. So it's really, really hard to, you know, go out there and your $25 order, $40 order on some take home or whatever. It may help in the short term, but if that business is not really strong enough or innovative enough or capable of sustaining, I think a lot of, you know, really nice sit down restaurants, if they can't provide takeout or something, it's going to be really tricky. Yours is a little bit maybe more unique. Like you said, you already have a higher return rate. It's not like a 200 seat restaurant or something where you've got a bunch of huge overhead. I mean, you've got to really, you put all your food, your money into the quality of your food, which you totally can taste the difference. But I mean, do you have any thoughts on that as far as is there a way to get through this better for restaurants? Like, how can we support restaurants and people in the industry better or best?
Well, I would say first, just keep going to your favorite restaurants. Okay. You know, if they're open, you know, here at Daniel's Table, we establish a connection with our guests upon their arrival and we seed it into them before they leave. And I believe that also is a benefit to us for our return. Okay. And so they know us. They come, they know us, and they're like, hey, how are you? And that's a very good question because it requires truth in to respond properly. And when people ask me, how are you? I say, I am doing very well, because I am, right? They didn't ask me how many NSFs I had in my account, you know, the past 2-3 weeks. They just asked, how am I doing? Right. I say I'm doing well because I believe that my restaurant, for example, is a gift and it's going to be fine. It's going to work its way through. And then our guests in turn know, like, okay, well, let's say, oh, you know what, we're going to get, you know, chef, can we get $250 gift certificates for you? And as soon as this thing is done, you know, we're going to come in or we're going to give it to our friends or we're going to come in or whatever. Because our guests are very generous as well. Mm. But I don't believe that they would, if they were not coming here regularly, you know, prior and even maybe paid us a visit, because most of our visits have all been from our guests. 90% of them have been from our guests here that live, you know, within the local cities around us. And then a small percentage have come in from out of town and have sought us this, you know, a specific style of dining. So to answer your question, as far as gift certificates, yeah, like personally, if I was on the guest side of the table, and if I had a relationship with Chef Dan and I was coming to his restaurant previously, then I'd be like, hey, chef, you know, how's everything going? And I would look him square in the eyes and I'd tell him, I'm doing well. We're going to get through this. Everything's rock and rolling. Our landlord's on board. Verizon's on board. Spectrum's on board. You know, Edison, the water, you know, you got to go down the line of all the, you know, your basic expenses to keep the joint open. You know what I mean? And if all of those guys are fine, then, you know, the $200-$300 that I make every week, I'm buying a little more food and keeping our folks interested, taking pictures, putting it out there that we're still alive. So to answer your question, yeah, I would, you know, you go out to eat, trust your restaurants, trust your chefs, you know, trust your locations. That's what I would do personally. That's what I would suggest. Cause you got it, you know, you've got a very valid point, you know, well, what if I go back next week and the restaurants, you know, and they're closed and then they're not going to reopen. So you're out, you know, I don't know, $20, not a big deal to me, but, you know, still it's a big deal to somebody, you know, and that counts. So, I believe, you know, I would assume that people would give their money to people that they kind of have a relationship to anyways.
No, that's a great point too. I mean, it's not like you're just going and putting money into Applebee's pocket. I mean, if you're supporting a small local business, regardless of what may happen, I think that there's a sense of pride in that a lot of people feel, and which in some ways is probably even more important than whether or not that restaurant might be there in 6 months because it's your favorite fish taco place or something. But like, it's, I'm wanting to help my neighbor. I'm wanting to help, you know, this person that I've been to this restaurant many times. I want to make sure that they're okay for a little while. Are you guys doing any kind of to-go type stuff? I mean, have you been able to innovate and find different ways to serve, or are you just kind of?
Yeah, we did. You know, so we got like a week of dinner service in here after a lot of places were those, you know, a lot of places were shutting down and, you know, going through all their change for that, as far as that was going. You know, I shop local. I shop for every 2-3 days worth of product anyways. But we were so able to have diners come in for a 1 week. So when they put when they said, okay, no more dining in restaurants, we can only do takeout, like the following week, I took a week off. And had to, you know, kind of, you know, go in the woods, so to speak, you know, and kind of have my own time and figure out how I was going to make this happen. Because I think, you know, I've never been a quitter at anything, you know, I mean, I quit drinking, you know, Jack Daniels, but I don't quit when it comes to something I believe in. So I just took a week off and kind of just putzed around, pulled weeds and in the backyard and, you know, planted some fresh herbs because spring is here and just got tuned in and said, and just had to reconfigure how I was going to put my food that comes with an expression on a plate to you, how I was going to put that into a box. Use the same quality of meats and chickens and ducks and produce. And, you know, I had to chop down my costs. I chopped down, you know, our pricing like, 2 to $17. You know, two on the hors d'oeuvres and salads, so like up to $17 on entrees. Because they're not getting the experience that they would be getting with if they came in here. Right. You know, and I didn't do all the math regarding, you know, the difference between the labor and, okay, you know, 125 here. Okay, I'll take this off. And did it. No, I just, common sense. It's like, look, man, your guests are not getting the experience. You got to put the food in a box. So it was tough because I had to find inspiration to do so, as you know, that might sound strange, but as a chef, it wasn't like, okay, well now how am I going to put a wild boar tenderloin with, you know, this date sauce on top and put it on in a recyclable box because we don't do plastic. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so, you would think it doesn't sound difficult, I'm sure, to a lot of people, but it was tough for me because part of what is the expression of eating and dining is what you see first, you know, tells your brain, oh my God, this looks amazing. Your brain tells your stomach, yes, this is going to taste good. And then you eat it, you know? So it was, I think it was harder for me than for my guests, my guests, you know, they laugh at me and they're like, you know, and it was amazing because the food that they took still for anniversaries and birthdays, they still ended up going home plating on nice china and took pictures and sent them to me. And I just thought it was so amazing.
Well, I think the thing that when we spent some time together and I got to actually see you in your element and you were kind of walking through the whole process, and I've had friends that have been to culinary school and have gotten a little bit of a taste of sort of the artistry of cooking. I really was struck by just how much of an artist you truly are and how you approach the food and, you know, even just on a visual standpoint about how these things will work together and how the flavors are going to match each other and the whole experience for the person sitting in the table. And it's just from beginning to end, it's just a, you know, as somebody who's been in film production, I really connect with that because I'm like, you're a producer in a lot of ways. I mean, you're really creating an experience, almost like a going to a film for a lot of people. It's like, this is when you walk into that restaurant, it's an experience from start to finish. And for me, it was one of those where I was like, it was almost kind of life-changing type thing, because you just go, the food is so good. I mean, it's just, it's really, really good. And it's one of those things where I just, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on is I thought, man, I want to make sure that people know about you. We get the word out about the restaurant. It's because it's not just about you. It's about the farmers. It's about everybody that's kind of connected to your community, about what you're putting out there for people to experience. You know, I want to make sure that people know, hey, if you can swing by, support Chef, pick up a meal, grab something, it will change your mood. It will change your quarantine experience, being able to come home and open up that box. You know, it might not be the same experience that you get in the restaurant, but it's going to completely transform that hour or so of dinner time when you sit down and have just an amazing meal. So I wanted people to really know about you and hear about what you guys are doing. Is there anything else that, besides that, before we finish up, is there anything else? Let's make sure I give you a chance to fill people in. Is there, you have the website, are there any other places maybe that you're connecting online, or services you guys are offering, or anything else that you want to maybe mention?
Oh, the website's the best, Ryan. You know, danistable.com. Everything's on there. I manage it myself. Whether it's 9 a.m. or midnight, I enjoy managing that myself. The menus, the various menus and what's going on for the month, all of that has, I have some stuff there now, but obviously when we get back into when we get back into this groove, I'll have everything on the website, upcoming events, wine dinners, and so on and so forth. But I just want to say also, Ryan, thank you so much for thinking of me and calling me in. And it just goes to show you, exactly what I said is we impact people when they're here. And, like you shared, you were impacted with, the beauty and the structure and the flavors and the food. The circular motion of like pulling a carrot out of the ground. I mean, there's this movement of pulling it out of the ground, getting it washed, getting it in a box, getting it to the restaurant, getting the restaurant chef to do something with it, and then putting it on a plate, and then you eat it. I mean, so there's this beautiful circular motion, and I really so for those of you that do come to Dana's Table, welcome to Dana's Table, and that's really what you can expect. And I really hope in a high way that other restaurants are able to perhaps even change some things around. There's various opportunities that come out of any kind of dark situation, like a death in a family. A lot of times comes a lot of forgiveness. So like with this, for instance, maybe people can up their game and change their game and say, hey, you know what, I want to eat better. So that's what we're hoping for.
Well, I'm a huge fan of you. I'm a huge fan of your food and your worldview and just the whole sort of ethos of what you're about. And I totally agree. It's one of these things that sort of have fingers crossed, because we've had such a long time in American history where we've just been inundated with sort of consumerism and quick and fast and commercials and all this sort of buy, 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 buy. And the ability to actually find people that are producing and making and creating and building. And that's to me, the true sort of American spirit. I mean, it's really what we were founded upon, is this agrarian kind of culture of like, hey, let's make sure everybody knows how to make stuff. And so to find an artist and somebody who really gets that as a chef, and the way that you approach it, your food, and the whole sort of just philosophy of life. And it's incredibly contagious and compelling. And I'm hopeful that people will, you know, maybe this will snowball and folks will start to go, you know what, let's eat this food. Let's plant some, you know, some carrots, and let's get back to earth a little bit and slow things down. So you never know. Maybe there's a silver lining on this stormy cloud.
Well, that's what I believe. So we'll you know, but it takes, I mean, the thing is too, Ryan, is that if you're in a lifestyle for the past 20, 30 years, I mean, it's like, you know, you it's going to take some time, you know, realistically, but people really, I believe that, you know, as a race, we're very resilient. And as a United States, we're very resilient. I mean, there's been so much that's happened. And, and my focus is the Coachella Valley. You know, honestly, it's just big enough and it's just small enough for voices to be heard here in the Coachella Valley. And that's what I'm really grateful for, is to be out here as well and to have this opportunity to have Daniel's Table to be able to share with others exactly everything that you and I have just spoken about. And and I'm grateful that you can hear my my views and know that they're valid views, and hopefully we can just suit up and show up out here in the valley anyways, you know what I mean?
Well, your optimism, I think, is definitely where everybody needs to have in their headspace. It's just staying positive and believing that, not only can we get through this, but we're going to get through this and be stronger and better. And I mean, that's really the only way to approach this, because it's how you innovate, it's how you adapt, it's how you stay healthy. Yeah, it's
right. Every miracle story that I've ever seen or heard, you know, you got to get to a point where you're being choked, and then you come out of it, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of feel that's, you know, kind of as an over for the valley, you know, we're just being squeezed. But, you know, I remember, you know, every time I was squeezed, it was for a good reason, you know, and I don't feel squeezed now, because I feel on track with what I'm doing is proper. You know, of course I feel squeezed on the financial aspect because I don't have guests coming in. However, but that's not something that I did. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, and that's the thing, I think.
You know, it wasn't something I created. Right. You know, it's out of my jurisdiction, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We're all in this experience together, which I think is such a unique thing to have happen. And to consider that, you know, having been somebody in the past who's had businesses, and then I'll wrap this up. But when they've, you know, I've had, you know, a dozen or so different businesses over the years. And especially like in 2008, when we had some construction businesses and things, but you know, things, some do well and then some don't, and you close things down and then you have successes, and it's a lot like the film business. And it's very easy, especially when you're isolated or you have a one-off kind of a failure or something, to think, oh man, that was on me. I didn't do anything. I didn't do that right. Or you kind of try to figure out how to learn from it, when you realize that literally like the entire globe is trying to battle this sort of medical asteroid that's coming and hitting everybody. You go like, you know, sometimes there's just some things outside my control. This has nothing to do with me. That's nothing to do with like my inability to manage through a crisis. It's literally like, and so you find, you know, like you said, when you're talking about like the landlord and the phone company and the electric company, everybody's trying to work together to make sure that you can survive. You wouldn't have that in a normal situation where it was just maybe cash flow or other situations where, you know, just life in general. This is a very unique time, and everybody's trying to pull together to make sure that, you know, as many people can survive as possible. That there's a lot of goodwill. There's a lot of like everybody pulling together. So it's just a weird, unique time to be alive and to be going through this.
I think it's fabulous. You know, I think it's awesome. I welcome it. I think it's a great way to open up many eyes and to bring up, you know, many, you know, dry, stale people that have been that way for a long time, and to wake up people and, hey, you know, teach, everybody has a choice, right? Mm-hmm. But I think it's a great opportunity to from various levels, from our world, economic and you know, wealthy and pharmaceutical and, you know, all of that, political and our leaders from that aspect. But, and I have strong views there as well. But keeping my feet here on the ground in the Coachella Valley and Daniel's Table, you know, I think, again, it all starts, you know, from the bottom. Anytime you build something, it starts from the ground. And if you build, you know, on in some good soil, some good land, you know, and you build solid, then, you know, it'll wither any storm, you know.
Well, I couldn't have said it better. That's the perfect way to finish this up. And I completely agree with you. And I want to encourage everybody, please. Go to the website, danielstable.com, and support an amazing restaurant with amazing food and
staff.
And staff and chef. And yeah, just, yeah, please check it out and do what you can. And I really appreciate it, Daniel. Thank you so much for your time. Look forward to staying connected and seeing how things move forward and you guys are able to weather this. And yeah, we're pulling for you and saying a prayer and trusting that it's all going to work out just fine.
Thank you, Ryan. I'm very grateful for the opportunity.
Well, take care. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds fabulous. Thank you, Ryan.
You bet. Bye.
Wow. So informative. I have never eaten at Daniel's Table. And now I don't know why I haven't. Because just him talking about the food and the artistry behind it, I'm just dying to now taste this. And we'll have to get some takeout there, food to go, but I cannot wait to go experience the full experience in the restaurant once we have the all clear to go do that.
Yeah, I mean, it was really surprising when I had spent some time with him. We were working on a project, and I got to spend a big chunk of the day there, and he prepared a lot of different food. And, you know, you get to spend some time when you're doing production stuff, you know, really talking to somebody. I mean, like I did a sushi commercial one time and it was the best experience ever because they literally just fed us sushi for
that's like my nightmare
5 or 6 hours.
Ooh, sushi.
It was fantastic. But like with him, I mean, you know, we could sit and I could stand in the kitchen, we were talking and he was kind of explaining just his story and his whole process of how he makes and puts the food together. And so he's like, hey, try this. And oh, he picked up some grapes or whatever it was, you know, take a sample of this. I mean, and it was like mind-blowingly fresh and sweet and everything. Just it reminded me of like when I was a kid and you would taste a tomato or you taste a grape and it was like real flavor. And now everything just seems so watered down and it's terrible and it's dry and airy and all this. And his stuff, because it's farmed locally by people that are doing it specifically for his restaurant too. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Wow.
So, and he's really passionate about the Valley and he comes up with these really cool recipes that are very seasonal about things that are available in the Valley. And so, yeah, it's a really cool kind of
Greater Palm Springs kind of restaurant. You can hear the passion in his voice.
No, he's a total artist. So great guy, great restaurant. I highly recommend everybody swing by and support him and help to
check out the website.
Keep him and his team going and working. And he's really, you know, one thing that he and I have talked even after the interview and stuff. And one thing that it just comes through all the time when you hear him share about his restaurant is the staff and just how much he really cares for his team and the people that have stayed there with him, and he pays them very well. And in the restaurant business, I mean, it's a crazy business with high turnover and all that. And you know, I mean, he's still very committed to making sure that his staff are taken care of. And so, you know, when
that's
you're
amazing.
Investing and buying his food, it's not just to get him like a third beach house. He's not interested in that. He's taking that money and he's putting it back into paying people and buying good quality food. And so, yeah, wow. And you really know that your dollar's going somewhere valuable. But, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Of course. My pleasure. Happy to help. And I think that's pretty much the episode. Anything else you want to add?
No. Day by day, things change. So we'll keep you updated on the next one. Stay tuned.
Sounds good.
Thanks for joining us.
See ya.